Our next presentation, Cultural Practices to Maintain Soil Physical Properties for Bermuda Grass Putting Greens. Presenting author is Jordan Kraft.
Thank you, Dr. McCurdy. So today we're going to be discussing cultural practices to maintain soil physical properties for Bermuda Grass Putting Greens. This is a picture probably most of y'all have seen, is a USGA style profile. And kind of the science behind this is the perch water table. And this perch water table kind of provides an environment that is not too wet, but is also not too dry. So it kind of provides the optimal growing conditions for a turf. But over time, these properties began to kind of deteriorate due to ultradwarfs kind of being heavy thatch producers as well as producing organic matter. And this picture here shows you from fall 2002 to fall 2005, and you kind of can see how it accumulates. And we all know a little organic matter is not good, and too much is not good as well. So it's kind of that in between. If we let it get too big, you know, we know we reduce the soil physical property benefits. And we know we have to manage it with cultural practices. There is no right combination. There's no wrong combination. We have top dressing, vertical mowing, hollow tinerification, deep tinerification, solid tine, hydrojet, drill and fill. There's a lot of different combination things out there you can use. But some of these can be quite invasive and can prolong recovery. It leads us to some previous research here. It was conducted by Atkinson in 2012. The objectives of their research was to kind of look at some surface area impacted, 15 to 25%, the number of aerification events per year with the top dressing volume varying. And they were looking at kind of some surface area impacted, 15 to 25%, aerification events one to two to three times yearly, tine sizing at 1.59 plus 1.27 centimeters, and as well those individually at 1.59 and 1.27, and spacing at 2.5 by 5 and then 5 by 5 centimeters and top dressing amounts. So they were kind of looking at some turf quality as well in that. So the results kind of indicated that the result increasing the amount of surface area impacted as well the number of aerification events per year improved soil physical properties. So that was a good thing they saw. But as well they kind of noted that reducing aerification frequency improved turf quality, but as well it did not provide better soil physical properties. So that kind of brings us to a crossroad. We know we're supposed to aerify a lot for agronomic purposes and provide good soil physical properties, but we're supposed to have good turf quality as well that is pleasing to people. So how do we kind of find that happy medium in between the two? That has kind of led us to our research project we've done. It's kind of using DryJet, which is a technology that takes high-pressure water injection, creates a void, and fills it with a dry material such as sand. And so we use is a dry material sand. And our research objective here today is to optimize the combination of dry injection technology with a modified traditional aerification programs to achieve minimum surface disruption without compromising soil physical properties and playability of an ultra-dwarf Bermuda grass putting green. So materials and methods. This research was conducted at Mississippi State University golf course during 2004, 2014, and 2015 growing seasons on an ultra-dwarf Bermuda grass MS Supreme. And the green was constructed in 1995 with USGA spec green, and it was regrassed to MS Supreme during 2004. Our treatments here have a control, which means that it did not receive any aerification events over the 2 years. The second treatment we have here is a hollow tine 1.27 centimeters. And we use a Toro ProCore at a 7.62 depth with a 2x4 centimeter spacing. And our hollow tine 0.63 centimeter tine size, we use a John Deere AirCore 800 at the 7.62 depth with a 2x2.54 centimeter spacing. And you see the asterisk there notes that these aerification treatments were applied during July of 2014 and July of 2015. So they only received once during the growing season of each year. And our fourth treatment we have here is a dry jet 2, which means it received 2 dry jet treatments over the 2 years. And we use the dry jet 4800 with a 12.7 centimeter depth with 7.62 spacing. And as well, that was combined with a hollow tine 1.27 centimeter diameter. And number 5, we're looking at dry jet treatment of 5 times over the 2 year period. And number 6, you're looking at dry jet 5 times plus a combination of hollow tine 0.63. And number 7, dry jet 4 times plus hollow tine 0.63. And number 8 follows the same with 2 dry jet treatments. How do we collect this data? We used a normalized difference vegetative index with a Field Scout TCM 500 also known as NDVI. We looked at chlorophyll index, the Field Scout CM1000, and percent recovery visually rated on a scale of 0 to 100%, which used the control as our 100% to kind of base our measurements. We also looked at volumetric soil water content with the Field Scout TDR 300 at two different depths at 3.81 and 12.2 centimeter depths. And surface firmness was measured with the USGA TrueFirm. Water infiltration rates, we were using double ring infiltrometer for the kind of the top 7.6 depth, kind of the surface. As well, we looked at the 10.2 to 17.8 centimeter depth, and I'll explain how we collected that in the future slides. Ball roll, we used a modified stent meter. Thatch depth, we collected a 5.05 centimeter diameter soil core at the 7.62 depth. Organic matter accumulation and bulk density were collected at the same type of soil core. Data analysis, this was a randomized complete block design with three replications, and as well processed with the general linear mixed model procedure using ProcGlomix and SAS at alpha.10. Results and discussion here. The following graphs will resemble this one. They follow. Our title here is July recovery percentage, and our y-axis we have our percent recovery, and then on our x-axis we have 8 days after treatment. And what we kind of see here is everything is kind of based off our control, not receiving aerification events being the highest 100%. And as well, we see right below that we have our dry jet treatment, which only received dry jet, and then you have a hold time 0.63, and then a combination of dry jet with that. And then below that recovery, we have hold time 1.27 with a combination of dry jet. Kind of what we see here is about a 15% difference in there. Percent recovery right there, and you kind of see that dry jet did not prolong or reduce recovery. So it was kind of this is kind of what we saw in this graph. Here's just kind of a picture of what we saw the day after, hours after the treatments were applied, all the time being on the left and dry jet being on the right. This graph here is looking at infiltration rates, centimeters per hour in that surface kind of infiltration. And then on our y-axis, we have centimeters per hour. And then on our x-axis, we have 14 days after treatment in July. And we kind of see here that our highest infiltration rate was received from a hold time 1.27, comparing it to a control being significantly higher. The control was significantly lower. And as well, we have hold time 0.63 and dry jet 5 times there. So we kind of see here that hold time 1.27 was 2 or 3 times greater than hold time 0.63 and just dry jet 5 times. But as well, we kind of note here, dry jet 5 times was still 2 times greater than the control. This is kind of what's collecting here, the infiltration rates at the kind of the top 7.6 depth surface infiltration. And as well, how we collected our infiltration rates at the 10.2 centimeter depth. I pulled a 7.6 centimeter depth soil core, and I took a 15.24 centimeter clear cylinder and pushed it about a 2.5 centimeters into the ground, filled it full of water, and timed for the infiltration. This is kind of a method we developed due to kind of having an issue with not being able to be too destructive to the surface of actually a golf course putting green. So it's kind of the way we did it, just kind of a method we developed. And this is the data we collected from that method. Infiltration rates here as well, with centimeters per hour on your y-axis, and your x-axis having October is when we collected this data. And we kind of see here our highest infiltration rate was received from a hold time 0.63 plus 2 dry jet events, and then our 2 lowest infiltration rates comparing that one was your hold time 0.63 and your control. Volumetric soil water content at the 3.8 centimeter depth. Our y-axis we have percent water content, and our x-axis we have 28 days after treatment during July. And you can kind of see here our 2 highest infiltration or volumetric soil water content was our control and hold time at 0.63, having a significantly higher content compared to hold time 0.63 and 2 dry jet events and dry jet 5 times and hold time 1.27. And we look at surface firmness here with the USGA TrueFirm. And our y-axis, we have centimeters, which can kind of be described as the higher, the softer surface, and the lower being a firmer surface, since it's measuring how far the weight is going into the ground. And we see here that the highest, softest surface we received was a hold time 1.27 compared to the control, dry jet 5 times, and hold time 0.63, about a 10% difference in those. Bulk density here, kind of what we saw Over the two-year period, we didn't really see any significant differences in any of the data collected, and that's kind of consistent with some previous literature and kind of being inconsistent in that. In summary, we have here, looking at surface characteristics, incorporating dry jet did not prolong recovery, and it did not slow recovery. The infiltration rates in that 7.6 centimeter depth, hollow time 1.27 was 2 times greater than dry jet in hollow time 0.63 treatments. And as well, dry jet treatments were 2 to 3 times greater than the control. Volumetric soil water content at the 7.6 depth, the control and hollow time 0.63 had the highest water content. And then surface firmness, we saw with dry jet 5 times and hollow time 0.63 provided a 10% firmer surface than the hollow time 1.27. So potential industry impact recommendations. I get this question a lot. Jordan, should I use dry jet? And that's a pretty common question. And I don't think that it is a yes or no question, but I think it's a question you have to ask. And some things to consider when you're asking that question is, what are your agronomic challenges on your golf course or sports field? And I think we all know there's not one golf course, there's not one sports field that has the same soil physical properties. So there's kind of things to ask is infiltration rates. What is your bulk density? What is your surface firmness? And what is your volumetric water content? So that's kind of some things to kind of consider, some questions to ask before you say yes or no. And as well, to kind of wrap that up, you're looking at balancing agronomic goals with financial limitations. That being said, thank you for your time. So you're asking how are we altering it down there, or what is your question?
I mean, if you're not modifying deeper into the profile, how is it affecting the infiltration?
Well, okay, so for our dry jet, we were going down 7.6 centimeters, and that says 10.2 centimeter depth, but dry jet is considered a fracturing technique is what they claim. So we wanted to see, were we getting some changes in the soil physical properties at that depth? So that's kind of why we were wanting to get down that deep. With our hollow time verification, we were going about 7.6. So it was kind of we were kind of looking at a different depth, but not as deep. So we kind of wanted to see, dry jet wanted to see some, their fracturing technique is kind of what we were trying to capture in that data. Yes?
I wonder if I missed it in the materials and methods. Talk about how much sand each treatment put down. But in other words, does dry jetting 5 times put on more sand than the hollow tining plus 2 dry jetting? If you equalize the treatments for the amount of sand that was introduced into the profile?
So the question was, did I equalize the sand amount that was put into all the treatments comparing with the dry jet and hollow tining? That's kind of a question. No, we really did not consider the certain amount of sand that was put in. We just top dressed to fill the holes with the hollow time treatments, and then we just simply did the dry jet a certain amount of times, just how much sand that was injected, which was about 4 cubic feet of sand per 1,000 square feet that were put in with the hollow time or with the dry jet per treatment.
So did the dry jet put in more sand?
I would assume yes, since we were only doing hollow time treatments once a year. So, you'd fill in about a 7.6 depth. So I would assume, yes, it was going deeper with dry jet.
Yeah,
yes.
The infiltration data, I think you said, were 14 days after the verification event.
Yes.
How long do you expect those benefits to persist?
So he's asking how long the infiltration benefits, I think it would persist. Over a long time period or just kind of a short term period? So when we took that data, it was after all the treatments had been applied. So comparing it kind of year one, the differences were a little more significant after year two of all the treatments had been applied. So I think, soil physical properties, I don't think you really see the benefits to certain treatments, later. So I think it would be, you know, you kind of see on certain treatments you would see prolonged, certain ones not. So.
Thank our speaker.